It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Good to have your company. Wisconsin native Nancy Rathbun is proof positive you can have more than one career in a lifetime. In fact, she's had three. After 30 years working for telephone companies like AT&T, Rathbun decided to retire early to take care of her sick mother. When her mother died, Rathbun says she got a sense that God wanted her to do something more, to join the seminary. But even after she became an ordained Congregational Christian minister, that voice was telling her to pursue her lifelong dream of writing fiction. Rathbun tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce how she made her leap of faith from minister to cozy mystery author.
So I thought that my path was laid out and I would spend a long and happy time there as an associate pastor. And indeed, I was happy there, but I was really missing my grandchildren. I had a little granddaughter in Tennessee and another baby on the way. So late in 2012, I made the decision to move to Tennessee. I live in Murfreesboro now. I had finished my first novel, Truth Kills, and was trying to market it. And I didn't get much good luck from any agents, but my writing coach, who is here in Waukesha, Kathy Giorgio, suggested that I send it to a mystery press in Northern Illinois, a small independent publisher called Cozy Cat Press. And I got a response saying, "We want to publish your book." And I'm pretty sure people in Wisconsin could hear me shout Yahoo from Tennessee. I'm pretty sure. I was doing the touchdown dance in my condo. And you know, I was just very excited and thrilled because I was feeling like no one would ever want to read my book. So that's how I sort of evolved into a published author after many years of writing part-time during my various jobs at AT&T and caring for my mother and going into seminary to become a minister.
What was it like to serve your congregation?
It was wonderful. It was difficult. I felt challenged every day. The most challenging thing for me, I was used to writing and researching. And so after the initial shock of standing up and giving a sermon, I think I eased into that pretty well. But what was hard and wonderful at the same time was being a part of people's lives in their crisis times, when they were in the hospital and wondering if they were going to recover or wondering how the surgery would go, when someone they loved was dying, when someone they loved was joyfully being married. It was such an intimate thing to be part of their lives at that time, and an experience that I don't think a lot of people have outside of ministry or caring for the people who are having tough times in their lives. It was really such a blessing to me. It taught me so much. It taught me some things about living my own life. Watching people prepare to die really took away a lot of my personal fear of dying. And I think we all have that sense of, even when we are people of faith, of, boy, this frightens me. I may be ready to meet my maker, but I don't know if I'll get through this process all right. And I was very comforted and reassured to be part of that process in people's lives who really learned to deal with it with grace. It was wonderful.
As you went through these experiences with the members of your congregation, did you use your writing at that time to reflect on what you were learning?
I did, to some extent. I think it almost worked the other way, though, Stephanie. I think I learned from them, and then that informed my writing.
So I could see making the jump from being an ordained minister to maybe writing about these kinds of issues about life and death. Mm-hmm. But again, you kind of took this left turn in your career and you became a mystery writer. Where did that come from?
Well, I had been writing for a long time. I always did it as a side thing when I had the time, when other things weren't pressing on me. So it was one of those things that didn't seem urgent to me. So I decided when I moved to Tennessee, where although I love the area and I love the people, it is the Deep South, and women as ordained ministers are not accepted as much as they are here. I struggled a bit to find a church there that I wanted to be part of, to be honest. But I had more time, and I wanted to really focus on this novel that I had finished by then, but was just sort of sitting there waiting for me, like being pregnant and waiting for the labor to begin and the delivery to happen. And I thought, okay, I'm going to labor on this for a while and see if I can have a successful delivery.
What drew you to the mystery genre to begin with?
I've always loved to read mysteries. I mean, from the time I was a little girl, like a lot of mystery writers, I started with Nancy Drew, and I just never looked back. I've gone through different subsets of the mystery genre for a while. It was a lot of romantic suspense when I was in my teenage years, and that romance was important. And then it was more thrillers. And now I read very widely in the genre and outside it, but I read a lot of different mysteries these days, and I think it's partly the logical side of my brain. Writing is very creative, but there's this deep logical part of me because I used to be a programmer and I used to be a project manager, and I like that progression of logic when I'm reading.
Yet you have a very literary style in this that kind of makes me think of the old detective movies from the 1940s. You know, your main character, Angelina Bonaparte, kind of has this very matter-of-fact, old-time detective feel about her.
It's interesting that you say that because one of her references in the book is to a particular film noir movie that I love, Laura, a classic, one of the top 100 films of all time. And it's this story about a detective and a woman who the detective has sort of fallen in love with her image rather than the real woman. And in fact, in the book, Angie refers to her growing attraction for the police detective on the case, Wukowski, as being similar to Dana Andrews in Laura. So I think she does have that film noir sensibility about her. Plus, being a librarian who has become a private investigator, she's very literary, as you say. She's very well informed, very well read. One of my favorite mystery authors is Dorothy L. Sayers from the 20s and 30s. So if any of that echoes in my work, I'm very honored.
Tell us a bit more about Angelina. What kind of woman is she, and what drives her in her private investigator business?
Well, Angie is a woman who has experienced personal betrayal in her life. Her former husband was a cheater. She always thought she would walk out the door the first time that ever happened, but unfortunately, it happened again, and she took him back. And the third time, she's pretty much changed the locks and said, we're done. She's not young. She's in her 50s, so she's had life experiences. She has a grown family and grandchildren. She's a bit of a, I laugh when I say this because I don't want people to think that the character is like me, but Angie is a bit of a hottie. She's very interested in fashion. She looks very professional on the outside, but she likes nice underwear. She is pretty much on a mission to uncover the truth. She's felt betrayed in her life, and that kind of betrayal, that sense that she has of hating the lie, has led her to be a private investigator. She wants to uncover the truth.
And yet she comes in this story to be representing this mob guy who's been cheating on his wife,
exactly,
who now finds himself accused of killing his mistress. But she takes on the case. Why doesn't she let this guy rot? And by extension, why don't we want him to take the fall for this?
Mm. Well, she doesn't start out representing, his name is Anthony Bologna, but he's affectionately called Tony Baloney in the story. She doesn't start out representing Tony. She starts out representing his wife, Gracie, who has found suspicious credit card statements that lead her to believe that Tony is running around. And Gracie and Tony have four children, and the fifth is on the way almost any day. And Angie feels sorry for the wife. She puts herself in Gracie's shoes. She decides to take the case to figure out if Tony is really cheating. She finds out that he is, but when he is accused of murdering his mistress, Gracie begs her to exonerate Tony. she really doesn't believe her husband is capable of murder. And Angie, as you said, sort of has this initial reaction of let him rot in jail. But then she backs off and realizes that infidelity isn't really cause for a lifetime incarceration, which is what Tony is facing in Wisconsin. So she reluctantly takes the case on after realizing that, to her mind, Tony is probably not the killer, and someone else is going to get away with it if he is accused and the accusal stands. So she wants to really, even in that case, get at the truth. The truth is more important to her than her personal connection to revenge, I guess I would say.
So we have infidelity, mm-hmm. murder, mm-hmm. betrayal, all of this coming from an ordained minister.
I wasn't ordained when I started the book. I will say that to start with, although I was certainly involved in church and in faith. And I will say for any listener who's hearing this that it's not Christian fiction. Christian fiction has very strict rules about what can be written and what can be spoken in the text. And so if anyone is expecting that, they'll be disappointed. It's a very gritty novel, even for a press that publishes cozies. And I think it brings to the fore a lot of the story of many people's lives. You know, my own life diverged in my 20s and early 30s from any kind of faith. I was very irreligious for almost a decade before I started to slowly move back into a faith stance. I think many people feel that way. I often hear people say, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. And I think that describes Angie. But the story does have its dark side. It also has its redemption side, I believe. And so in that way, I think it's very true to life.
Well, Nancy Rathman, thank you so much for coming in and sharing Truth Kills with us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Nancy Rathman's first novel is Truth Kills, an Angela Bonaparte mystery, published by Cozy Cat Press. Rathman is an ordained minister in the National Association of Congregational Christian Churches. A longtime Wisconsinite, she now lives in Tennessee, but she's back in town tonight for a reading at Milwaukee's Mystery One bookstore. You can find more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take one last break and then hear about another new book by a local author and artist, Michael Greer, and the middle school students who helped him create it. Lake Effect returns with that conversation right after this.